Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name's Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's podcast. Today we're going to be looking at the key challenges facing a practice manager and how best to overcome them in the company of Lisa Bainham, who's a practice manager at the Old Surgery and Crewe. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you very much for giving us your time today. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Yeah, sure. Hi, Nigel. I've been a practice manager for 20 years nearly. Before that, I was a dental nurse and decided that I quite liked the administration side of things, so moved towards that. Was really lucky to get the opportunity for practice manager from the age of 19, which is unusual. And we had a squat practice and we built it up to 6 surgeries, really successful practice over the last sort of 20 years. We're now a mixed practice, primarily private, but we do a small NHS contract and referral services for the local dentists in the area.
I mean, that's a pretty major evolution that you've seen during your time as practice manager there. What would you say were the key challenges along the way?
Initially, we were 100% NHS, which had its challenges. And it was within about 5 years, we kind of realised that it wasn't the place we wanted to be in. The dentist was stressed, the staff were then stressed, and what we were limited to do, it just wasn't the service that we wanted to provide for the patients. So when we decided to look into dental plans, we chose Practice Plan because we really liked, first of all, Josie, who was our regional manager at the time, and they just made the transition so easy. It just wasn't a major problem.
So what sort of other areas, as you've taken that first step away from the NHS and into the private side of things, what other things have you had to
Well, I think with that basically comes the challenge of if you're going to be providing a really excellent service, people are walking in your front door and they want to get the wow factor, not just from the building, but from the team. So building the team, that's been probably one of the hardest things, making sure that they were on board with what we wanted to do. We've never compromised, and that's not meant in a harsh way. It was just we needed like-minded team members. And not every, you know, it's not for everybody. Some people do just want to go to work and get through the day, but we wanted our team to be a little bit special, to be honest. So we did get criticized once when we took on a couple of new dental nurses to be trained. There was a dental nurse mentor that said she had quite strong feelings about it. She just said, Lisa, your problem is your standards are too high. So I just laughed and said, thanks.
Yeah, as criticisms go, that's quite a good
I'll take that one. Yes. Staff is difficult because it's getting the balance between the really high standard that you expect and making sure that you've still got that relationship, you know, because you're working alongside people every day, you get to know the families, you do get a personal relationship with them. And if you have to manage them sort of quite severely, it does become quite difficult. So I think if you've got your good team, which we've got, we're really lucky.
So Lisa, when you're interviewing, what sort of things are you looking for that give you the kind of clues that this person might be a good fit for you?
I feel for them as a person as much as anything else. You've got the CV, you've got the qualifications. It all matters whether they're going to fit in and get what your ethos is within the company. I suppose I'm a little bit sneaky. I kind of get them to come in. I ask them, please don't be too formal. It's going to be a nice, friendly chat. I don't want them to come in and have the guard up. So I get them to come in and I get a couple of different staff members to talk to them on a welcoming front. And I think their reaction to them is really important as well, because you can gain quite a lot from just how somebody walks in and introduces themselves. If they're coming in, they're friendly and confident and respectful to the reception team, for example, you know, that's a really, really good sign. If you've got somebody that comes in very formal, maybe a little bit snippy, and you do take nerves into account, obviously, but sometimes that's a good indicator as well of how well they're going to integrate in the team. They need to get on with everybody, really. And like I say, you work hard at getting the team that you want. It does only take one person that can tip the apple cart, so to speak. We've had it a few times, but I think you either manage them, performance manage them, and things work out brilliant, or you sit down and they know if things aren't working out well, they feel it themselves. So you have just a genuinely honest chat and just say, how are you feeling about work at the moment? And it doesn't need to be difficult. I don't think we've ever had to let anybody go that wasn't happy to go. Okay. They just wanted to do a different, work in a different practice within, you know.
That makes sense to me. I mean, it is about fit, and sometimes people fit other practices better than they fit your own.
Absolutely.
And I can totally see that when we see that. You know, these are things I think that I've encountered throughout my career. You mentioned about the high standards that you were picked up on, in inverted commas. If I'm a patient walking into the practice, what do those high standards feel like then?
Well, you've been to our practice, you've seen our practice, so you walk in and it is kind of an instant, oh, this is really nice. So it's expected the girls are going to be doing their part with that. So basically, we always have two girls on the desk, and the moment they walk in, and it is difficult now because we've got automatic doors, so it's people can you don't just hear somebody come in, it's automatically somebody's there. And the girls will welcome them, eye contact, whatever they're doing, they would look up immediately, no matter what they're doing. They don't take phone calls on the front. They basically, it's customer service focused. If a phone call comes in, it gets taken, transferred to somebody at the back or in treatment coordinator room. The people at the front are dedicated to do the welcomes and the goodbyes, basically.
Yeah. And so they're just receiving the patients,
instead of doing
what a receptionist, I guess.
It's really important, I think, that patients walk in and it doesn't feel like a call centre, because we're a big practice, the phone's constant, and you know, the girls are sat there with the headsets on. And it's that challenge of making it, so they can be quite stressed if they're really busy. We've got 6 surgeries running, 3 phone lines going, but it's, no matter what's going on around, if they're calm at the front, the patients come in and they're calm and they like it and they've got time to chat to them. And obviously, as most people do, you know, we get to know them and we try and personalise it to them, basically. We know what makes them happy, what they don't like, whether the daughter's been married. It's quite cliche, but it's so important to build those personal relationships. And they all seem to know their names. The patients walk in and it's Michelle and Kerry, or Sharon or Sam, and it's lovely. It's really nice.
I mean, you're right when you said about the fact I visited the practice, and one of the things that struck me when I very first came was that everyone smiled at me. There was someone on the way into a surgery, there was someone going upstairs, there was someone sitting at the front desk, but everyone acknowledged me and smiled. I mean, they didn't know who I was at all at that point.
It doesn't matter who you are. That sounds awful.
No, that's what I meant, really, is that there wasn't we're expecting Nigel. It was it could have been anyone, and you know, it was just wonderful to see. I'm really interested in the separation of the phone from the front desk, as it were. How big a step was that?
It was quite tricky, because you hear a phone ringing and you just want to pick up. You need a big enough team to be able to do it, which we are privileged to have. And we have a separate treatment coordinator room, and we have a separate area at the back of reception where, if they're free, they're the first people to pick the phone up. It was a little bit tricky. We had some coaching from Tracy Stewart, who come in and did some reception journeys for us. And it was a bit out of people's comfort zone, I will be honest, and they probably hate me for it, but we did have a few tears and a few insecurities along the way. You know, standing up and shaking someone's hand and saying, welcome to the old surgery, my name's Lisa. It is not always the most natural thing. It is for most, perhaps some of us in our roles, but it's when you've got a patient coming in that's not expecting you to do that and you think, they're going to feel this is weird.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big change that I've seen in my career. I've been working with the dental profession for 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
That was never happening back in the 90s, or hardly ever happening, whereas it's a very different world now. And I think you're right, you can see that some people would struggle to make that adjustment.
Yeah, well, that would indicate, I would say, that that's not the right person for your front of house, because they're the first person that the patient's seeing. Or this is where the standard things comes in, I think. We've got a team of 34, and we've probably got six of our girls. Bear in mind, our newest member has been with us 3 or 4 years. All the rest of us have been between 10 and 20 years. And even some of the long-standing staff don't answer the phone. It's so specific, the scripts that the routines that we use to make sure we get everything we need from the patient to be able to help them. And it's a real skill. I get really, really het up when I hear people say, oh, just a receptionist. They are the most important people, definitely. And those phone calls that they answer, potentially, you know, I was on a course with Les and
Simon.
It was wonderful, actually, because it really does make you think and realise, you know, you take that phone call, and if you're not on top form, that patient could just go, and they could have been coming in for implants, they could have brought the wife, they could have told the colleagues. Potentially, you're talking thousands of pounds, and it's just too important. So the staff that we have a small team that are dedicated to answering the phone and helping patients on the desk, from selling the plans and or talking to them about the plans, to, you know, going through treatments and directing them to the treatment coordinator. It's very specific, and I think that's the key, definitely.
You mentioned scripts earlier on,
yes.
And because you sort of backtracked a little bit and is trying to find the right description for it.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I've found when I have visited the practice is that everyone's very natural. There isn't a scripted feel to it.
No, I think that was originally, it felt, this is what I wanted people to say, this is how I wanted it to go. So if a patient rang up, the girls have got forms to fill out to make sure that they're capturing the patient's names, date of birth, email, and then just getting some information really for their first appointment so that we can, like I say, answer their questions specifically. What's brought them to ring us today? Is there anything specific that's bothering them? I would say you're looking more at the emotional side of why they've picked the phone up to you, definitely. And it's not a sales thing. It's just knowing your patient so that when they come in, we can make sure we address those things and those hang-ups, or we can be sensitive and make sure we're respectful and, you know, they feel their dignity is retained. If there's something that's excruciatingly embarrassing for them, yes, we'll address it, but we'll do it very sensitively.
I think that's so important, and I can really see the value of scripts in the early days, just to get people more comfortable, because I think those first few interactions will set the tone for everything else. So if you can, and I hesitate to use the word practice, but if you can practice a bit so that you are entirely confident in those first interactions, then everything else will flow from it.
It does. Like I say, people don't sit there and read scripts. It's just going through your basic bits of information. And the girls, as you say, it can't come across scripted. It can't. And it is basically a conversation.
Yeah.
But you're gathering all your bits of information that you need that you then book in. And it's obviously things like gathering where have they heard about us, things like that for the marketing side of things. That's essential. And as you know, I like my KPIs quite a lot. So we measure where the patients are coming from, why they're coming, what they're coming for. So if they're coming because they're thinking of implants, I know what marketing I've done on that recently and how much I've spent. And if the patient books in, what's the conversion rate? It's all measured all along the way from the first phone call, basically.
Which I think is excellent, and as you know, it's a bit of a hobby horse of mine anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure it bores other people sometimes.
Well, I just think it helps you have a sort of feeling of control more,
yes.
So you know what's happening.
You have to justify what
and,
you're doing.
And we you know, in the context of challenges facing a practice manager, that, again, wasn't something, well, it still is something that's not done very often in many practices, but
yeah.
How did the team embrace that more kind of measurement focus to the day-to-day activity?
I think sometimes there is a few sensitivities if, for example, I use a feedback audit and I ask the girls to make sure they ask a minimum of 5 people each day to get feedback from the patient, see how well we're doing with various things. So we use different means of paper feedback to digital feedback on an iPad. And again, when you introduce these things and set targets for people, they can get a little bit twitchy, but you still need it doing. And if it's not, and this is again a bit of a cliche, it's not measured, you can't see what's working and what's not. So I think nowadays, with all the new audits that you're expected to do with compliance, it's become quite normal for them to have to tick a box for almost everything they do.
Yeah.
So I think it's becoming a little bit easier. But what I find is important is that you're sharing the information with the team. So we've got a huge whiteboard on reception at the back, and all the bits that we measure, for example, missed appointments or recall percentages, new sign-ups for plans, how much feedback we've got, various, there's numerous other things, and it's basically all there for them to see each month. It's updated at the beginning of each month for the month previous, so they can see. I almost don't have to tell them if the missed appointment rate's gone up. I don't have to go, girls, what's happened here? They look at that and go, right, we need to step up the confirmation calls more for this group of patients. And
oh, that's brilliant, because I mean, that's those kind of KPIs, you know, that management information, it allows the team to self-manage then. Because
absolutely.
They've got visibility.
And I'm not classed as being on their back. I'm
yeah.
not having to manage them, which is great for me. We have a meeting every 2 weeks where we go through it a little bit more specifically. But once that information's up there, the girls are self-motivated enough to take action and
yeah.
know what they need to do. You know, if recall percentages have dipped a little bit, they're asking themselves why.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it can be it's November and people hanging on till December
yeah.
because they want to come in before Christmas. You know, sometimes there's an explanation for things. Or sometimes, you know, occasionally it is a baton's been dropped a little bit with one thing or another. If we've introduced a new way of doing things, then that can sometimes overshadow one of the other
yeah.
other parts. But like you say, yeah, by giving them, it's no good me just having that information.
Yeah.
It's almost useless to me. They're the ones that can implement them.
So that's interesting. So under the sort of title of challenges, then we've spoken about the importance of getting the right team,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, at the selection process, making sure we've got the right person, and then once they become part of the team, making sure that they adhere to those high standards that we touched on before. And then linked to all of that is having the right business measurement systems in place that are capturing the right information and displaying the right information to everyone so they can feel involved.
Yeah.
And within the answers that you've given, you mentioned about compliance, so I can't
yeah.
avoid a conversation about challenges yeah, without saying
yeah.
compliance, because that's a big shift in the time that you've been practice manager.
Absolutely.
So how have you found that? What were the issues? What was good? What was not so good?
Well, initially, I think a few years ago, we were probably in the same boat as everybody else, running around panicking like headless chickens. What do we do? It was a big feat to get everything sorted. Although we'd always done BDA good practice scheme and things like that. So we were, I'd say, halfway there. It was just making sure we'd got a few other things in place. So I think most practices were doing most of what was needed anyway, well, but when obviously with CQC and you've got all the outcomes, and it scares people. So the way that it was presented was quite scary for people and for us. But when you start understanding it and you get that help, we had help from you guys, that was really good. You actually start making sense of it and go, oh yeah, we already do that. So I actually like compliance. I'm very lucky. We actually have one of our girls who we sort of promoted to compliance manager. So we work with Jilly, who absolutely adores all things compliance, because it's really difficult to juggle practice management with, especially in private practices, marketing. You know, you need to do your marketing, you've got your referral services, you've got to be on top of all of those things. So compliance is something that, yes, it needs doing and it's really important, but I felt it was taking away too much of other things that I needed to do. So I think it's important that you get the right person in your team to help with that, or the whole team to help with that, ideally. And they can dedicate their time to it and do it really, really, really well. But yeah, I like compliance. I think CQC is a good thing. I know some people don't, but it's just a measuring stick of making sure that things are done properly and that your patient's health is at the forefront.
I mean, certainly I've heard it said before that what the CQC is looking for is actually kind of examples of good practice in running a practice. It's actually good practice management.
Yes, absolutely.
And therefore, if it's maybe just a different way of formalising something that you would want to be doing anyway.
I think so. I mean, the way that you want to be treated as a patient, or if you were to go into a practice, it's the customer service side. Like you say, they are focusing now on, are you well led? And customer service has actually started to bubble up alongside all of the other types of compliance that CQC want you to adhere to. So when a patient comes in, they want to know that you're being pleasant, that you're treating somebody respectful. And it just shows that that is as important as a lot of the health and safety and things like that. But I think being well led, that's obviously falls on the practice manager's shoulders majority of the time. And I think, again, there's been a lot of confusion as to, a lot of people are confused as to what that means. Mm. But it is what it is, basically.
Yeah.
You know, no practice is perfect. We're certainly not perfect. And I know that when we had our CQC inspection, we'd had a really, not a massive incident, but we'd had one of our instruments break, and the patient was unfortunately swallowed it, which was terrible. But we followed procedure. We took the patient to the hospital. We followed it. And I suppose, really, if we hadn't have understood what well-led meant, some people would panic. CQC, you're going to see that in the accent book. Oh, they're not going to like it. You would panic. But we knew that, you know, sometimes these things happen and they're unavoidable. It's nothing you've done. So you go back and you go, okay, these instruments, this is the maintenance contract that we have. This is all the service history. This is just one of those unexplainable things. It went through to a risk assessment in the practice that then went on to a meeting with the whole team. Do we need to do anything differently? And a new policy was drawn up. And she was only bothered about the end, how we dealt with it. And she didn't actually even ask if the patient okay. It wasn't about that. They're not there to catch you out over things.
It's just about the process through which you responded to
it. And that's being well led to show that you are thinking about things. And clinical governance, they just want to know that you're looking at things and improving things and making sure that everything's thought through rather than just...
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of what you said, Lisa, that I think initially there's a lot of fear of the unknown for a lot of practices,
absolutely,
and practice managers. And then there's this point about actually trying to properly understand what well-led means and other requirements are. Is it October you became president of ADA?
Last year.
Yeah, so October last year. Are these the sorts of issues that your members are coming to you with?
Yes, absolutely. Compliance is top of the list, I would say. And the nice thing is that they do have a lot of support network from people like yourselves and other practice managers. I don't think there's as much panic now. There are a few things, changes coming about, but I think people will embrace them a lot more calmly than they did initially. I think the second round of inspections has been a lot more successful. I know that from a meeting that I was at not that long ago, they've now employed 30% more dentally experienced people as the inspectors, which is great, because one of the gripes that I've heard from our members of the Practice Managers Society is that they were just not consistent, and if the inspector wasn't dentally experienced, they seem to be having, those practices seem to be having a lot more of a grueler inspection, so to speak, longer, and they were pulling them up on things, textbook things that weren't quite
so
right.
Are you saying they're like, I was going to say, you're saying they're pickier, but actually they're maybe not quite interpreting things?
It was a bit more black and white.
Yeah.
And sometimes grey's not wrong.
Yes.
There has to be grey, as long as if you've got a policy and you're doing something slightly different, but you've risk assessed it, and that's why you're doing that slightly different, that's perfect, and that's well led, and that's clinical governance. But yeah, some of the members were having a slightly difficult time. And I think one of the major grudges that they have at the moment is, you know, practices don't always know why they've been picked for a CQC inspection, and that can unsettle people.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a risk and random factor, the 11%. You've been flagged up by GDC, fitness to practice maybe, or there's been some complaints, or you've taken on a new NHS contract, or just simply that your name's kind of in the hat and it's come out randomly. And I asked if I really think that they should be informed as to which category they're falling in, because it can make people feel quite picked on a little bit.
And when you said you answered that in your capacity as president of ADAM, you're able to then speak as the representative of practice managers.
Yeah, absolutely. We email all our members and say, I'm going to a CQC engagement meeting. What issues are you having? What are you finding is happening during your inspections that you're not happy with? Any particular questions you want me to ask? So I was lucky enough to go and be able to put our points across, and then come back and reassure people. You know, people, I'd been on a course at the beginning of the year where somebody had told the whole room that they were going to go to the score system, you know, if you can get outstanding.
Yeah.
And I sat there, I didn't challenge it at the time, because sometimes these things change so much that, you know, maybe, and that caused quite a bit of panic. And then obviously at the CQC meeting I asked the question, and it was like, no, never, it will never happen.
Okay.
So it's just, it's nice to be able to reassure practice managers. And I think it's become more positive. I think there was a lot of scaremongering going around, and I think that's calmed a lot recently.
How are you enjoying balancing your practice manager role at the old surgery with being president? How's that? That must have some demands on you.
Yes, it's busy. I'm really lucky. Stephen Rich, who I work for at the old surgery, are amazing. They're really proud that I'm doing it. And, you know, when you've been doing a job for sort of 20 years, you do need, I would never want to leave there. I've always been there from, and they've looked after me and I've looked after them. It's, you know, we're a little family, really. I wouldn't want to leave and do anything totally different. So balancing, I do a lot of the association work outside of work, but also they're happy that I do a little bit inside work, because it benefits the practice as well. So yeah, and having a really good team. From the ADAM side of things, I've got Sam doing admin, and Chris, who helps with the marketing, is my honorary vice president. That was a good move. And then the girls in work, so supportive. You know, they come along and help on the stand and things like that for me. And I've got one of my girls, the other day I did a presentation and a PowerPoint, and I just said, there's my PowerPoint, make it look pretty. So I'm so lucky. I wouldn't be able to do it if I didn't have such good people around me.
Yeah. But it sounds like it's a really important role, and that ADAM serves a really valuable purpose.
It does.
When you were talking about the representation for things like the CQC.
Yeah.
But my guess is that you would be encouraging anyone to join ADAM.
Absolutely. Practice managers have a really difficult time. they're the greatest jugglers in dentistry. They're expected to do so much, and sometimes with not enough experience or training or support. And we're just there to help them bring it all together. They can ask us the silly questions. They're the most important questions quite often. We're there to support them. We have a thing called Help Colleague, and they can email us questions in and, can I have a template? Does anybody have a policy for this or that? And, you know, the response from members who want to help each other is great. And it is a close group, so our members do benefit from that, which is a little bit different than some other things that are about it. And I think it gives them the confidence that they can talk freely. And we support them with magazines. We've got a lot of new partners at the moment who are working with us, who are providing member discounts for materials, equipment, insurance. There's all sorts. And we've gained a few more sponsors, so we're hoping to put that back for the members and provide some really nice perks for them.
Excellent. Well, Lisa, I am very grateful to you for your time. I have this feeling we could be here in 2 hours' time, 3 hours' time, exploring
possibly
all of this. So I think what we'll probably look to do is return to other subjects with you in the future. But for now, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.